Welcome to this deep dive. In this lesson, we're exploring understanding university expectations. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now let's go further by connecting the topic to real university experiences, study challenges, confidence, and practical academic habits.
Yeah, and to kick things off, I think we really need to look at a pretty startling reality, which is that a massive percentage of first-year students hit a wall academically right in their first semester.
Oh, absolutely. Like right out of the gate.
Right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is almost never because they lack the intelligence to be there. I mean, they got in, right? It's really because the underlying machinery of how they approach learning just hasn't been updated for this entirely new environment they just walked into.
Right, because the environment shift is, well, it's total. It catches so many people completely off guard.
It really does. We're talking about a fundamental difference in how learning actually works. And, you know, demystifying that leap from high school to university, that's really the core mission of what we are unpacking today.
Yeah, because if you can understand those expectations early on.
Exactly, like before that first massive wave of midterms hits.
Yes, before the panic sets in. That is the absolute secret to building academic confidence and, you know, avoiding a total crisis.
Yeah.
Let's really look at that shift, though, because I think a lot of incoming students assume university is just, I don't know, high school, but harder.
Right, like the books are thicker and the essays are longer.
Exactly. But it's actually an entirely different mode of transportation. Like, I always use this analogy. In high school, you were essentially riding a train.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, because think about it. The school district laid the tracks, the administration set the schedule, and your teachers are driving the engine. Your only real job is to just, you know, stay in your assigned seat, look out the window, and do the worksheets handed to you.
You're just along for the ride.
Right. But university is completely different. University is like someone handing you the keys to a car, pointing to a map, and just saying, good luck.
Wow, yeah. That is spot on, because you suddenly have this absolute freedom, but that freedom comes with absolute responsibility. I mean, you could take any route you want, but you are the one driving now.
You have to watch the fuel gauge.
Exactly. Check the fuel, anticipate the blind spots, actually keep the car on the road. And this brings us to the foundational concept here, which is independent learning.
Which is a huge adjustment.
Massive.
Yeah.
In higher education, the expectation is that students proactively manage their own academic progress. The those elaborate safety nets of high school, they're completely gone.
And the thing is, those safety nets are so ingrained, we don't even realize they're there until they just vanish.
Right.
Like in high school, if you don't turn in a paper, your teacher pulls you aside after class. They might email your parents. They actively intervene to stop you from failing.
Oh, for sure. But at university, I mean, the professor hands you a syllabus on day one.
Yeah.
And that document is, for all intents and purposes, it's a binding professional contract.
Yeah. They might never mention the midterm date out loud again.
Exactly. They might never remind you about the major paper deadline.
Right.
And nobody's going to chase you down if you miss it. It is entirely on your shoulders to know what is happening, what it's due, and to actually be prepared for it.
Which is terrifying the first time you realize it.
Yeah.
This is where that initial shock to the system really takes root, I think. And a huge part of the trap is the illusion of time.
The illusion of time, yes.
Because it is dangerously easy to confuse free time with being free from responsibility. Like, let's paint the picture here for you. You look at a standard first-year university schedule, and you might only have, what, 15 hours of actual lectures and seminars a week?
Give or take, yeah.
So compared to being locked inside a high school building from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. every single day, it feels like a vacation. You're sitting out in the quad on a Tuesday afternoon thinking, you know, I've completely hacked the system.
Right. It feels like endless freedom until week five rolls around.
Yes. The dreaded week five.
It is universally when that first major wave of assignments and midterms all hit simultaneously. And suddenly, that student realizes the free time they were enjoying was actually supposed to be their independent study time.
They were supposed to be working.
Exactly. The standard expectation in university is that for every 1 hour you spend inside a classroom, you should be spending, you know, 2 to 3 hours outside of it reading, researching, doing the work.
So given that, how does a student fundamentally redefine personal responsibility to actually survive that week five crash? Because it can't just be about trying harder.
No. Trying harder without a system just leads to burnout. It requires a completely new operational framework. We can categorize this shift into, well, four actionable areas. Let's look at the first one. managing attendance.
Okay, managing attendance.
Right, because in massive university lectures, attendance often isn't strictly taken. There's no roll call. But the responsibility to be there is entirely yours. The lecture doesn't just repeat the textbook. It provides the professor's specific analytical framework.
I'll push back on that just a bit, though, because I hear this all the time. In the era of recorded lectures and uploaded slide decks, a lot of students argue, you know, why do I need to actually sit in the room? I can just watch the recording at double speed later in my dorm.
I mean, you can do that, but you lose the cognitive engagement of the room.
How so?
When you're in the physical space, you're observing the professor's emphasis. You hear the impromptu questions other students ask. Mm. You are in an environment dedicated solely to learning rather than, you know, sitting on your bed fighting the distraction of your phone or your roommates.
That makes a lot of sense. You're physically opting in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, the second area of responsibility is tracking deadlines proactively, which we touched on with the syllabus.
Right. No one is reminding you.
Right. And the third is initiating communication.
Which is a massive paradigm shift. High school teachers initiate. University students have to initiate.
Precisely. If you don't understand a concept, the professor won't know unless you tell them. You have to actually walk into their office hours. And then the fourth area is independently planning your study time. You have to manage the sheer volume of reading before you even step foot in the seminar.
I really want to zero in on that classroom and seminar environment, especially how a student transitions from, like, solitary studying to active participation, because there is this incredibly tempting myth of the silent student.
Oh, the back row sitter.
Yes. You walk into a lecture hall with 300 other people. The instinct is to sit in the very back row, quietly transcribe whatever is on the screen, and just slip out the back door the second the hour is over without uttering a single word.
It is a very common defense mechanism. I mean, the sheer scale of the university environment can be incredibly intimidating.
Totally.
But relying on that passive approach severely limits your academic success. Active participation is the mechanism that transforms information from something you just passively heard into something you actively understand and retain.
So it's not just about getting participation points.
Not at all. The pedagogical research is definitive on this. Active participation directly and measurably improves your learning outcomes.
But let's look at the psychology of the student in that moment. Raising your hand in a room of 300 people, or walking into the office of a professor who literally wrote the textbook that's on your syllabus and admitting, I have no idea what he meant in chapter 4.
It's scary.
It is terrifying. It feels like shining a massive spotlight on yourself and announcing to the entire academic world that you don't belong there.
Yeah. And what you're describing there is classic imposter syndrome.
Mm.
And it's vital that we completely reframe that fear. Think about it from the instructor's perspective, right?
Okay.
They do not expect you to arrive knowing everything. If you did, you wouldn't need to take the class. When you ask a question, it does not signal weakness, it signals engagement.
That's a great way to look at it.
It demonstrates that you are actively wrestling with the material. Seeking help is not a failure. In the university setting, recognizing the limits of your own knowledge and utilizing support services, whether that's office hours, writing centers, or study groups, that is a core academic skill.
It's part of the job description.
Exactly. It is the defining trait of a mature, independent learner.
That makes perfect sense. You aren't graded on your ability to never need help. You succeed based on your ability to source the answers when you get stuck.
Precisely.
To really ground this, let's explore a specific scenario from the curriculum. We have a case study of a first-year student who hit that exact wall we were talking about earlier. This student was bright, clearly capable, but they were absolutely drowning.
It happens so often.
Yeah, they were heavily relying on last-minute studying, pulling all-nighters right before exams, and waiting passively for lecturers to remind them about due dates.
So it's the classic high school approach totally failing in a university environment. The volume and complexity of university-level work, simply break that approach. You cannot cram a semester's worth of complex theoretical concepts into your short-term memory in a single 12-hour panic session.
So let's look at the intervention here. How did they actually turn it around? Because the solution wasn't that the student suddenly, I don't know, drank a magic potion and became smarter.
No, not at all.
Mm.
The issue was never their intellect. The issue was their system. The intervention focused entirely on overhauling their daily organization and moving from reactive panic to proactive management.
So what did that look like practically?
Well, specifically, they stopped treating study time as something that just happened when they felt like it or when a deadline was looming. they started mapping their week, blocking out specific hours for specific tasks. They began tackling assignments in small chunks over 2 weeks rather than in a frantic 48-hour window.
And the results of changing that underlying machinery were twofold, right? Their grades naturally improved, but I think the more critical outcome was the psychological shift.
Absolutely.
Their overall confidence skyrocketed. When your system is organized and you aren't constantly waiting for the next deadline to ambush you, your baseline anxiety drops significantly.
That is the real victory. And it highlights the major takeaway for anyone listening to this right now. If you are experiencing overwhelming academic stress, or if your grades are dipping, do not internalize that as a lack of intelligence.
It's not about how smart you are.
Right. It is almost always just a symptom of outdated study habits. You are essentially trying to run high school software on a university-level operating system. It simply requires an upgrade.
I love that, a software upgrade. That brings us to a crucial moment for self-reflection. I want to pose the exact prompt from our lesson directly to you, the listener. What changes do you need to make to succeed in university?
It's a great question to sit with.
Yeah, I encourage you to do a mental audit of your habits right now. Where are your strengths? Maybe you never miss a lecture, but where are you still waiting for that train conductor to tell you what to do? Are you waiting until the night before the seminar to do a week's worth of dense reading?
To give that audit some structure, let's dive into the practical application activity from the curriculum. The goal here is to define 5 personal success habits that you can begin implementing immediately.
And these shouldn't just be vague goals, right?
Exactly. They need to be grounded in how the brain actually works. We talked about attending classes consistently. Let's look at another one, note review.
Oh, this is a big one. The common trap is taking meticulous notes in a lecture, closing the notebook, and literally not looking at it again until the midterm 3 months later.
Which is a disaster.
Total disaster. I want to bring in the cognitive science behind this, specifically the Ebbinghaus forgetting curve.
Yes, crucial concept.
Because our brains are incredibly efficient at deleting information we don't use. If you learn something on Monday, by Tuesday, you've naturally forgotten a huge percentage of it just due to the physical decay of those neural pathways.
Exactly. And the way you interrupt that memory decay is through spaced repetition. If you build a habit of taking just 15 minutes at the end of every week to review and consolidate your notes from your classes, you force your brain to recall that information.
Just 15 minutes?
Just 15 minutes. It physically alters the neural pathways, moving the concepts from fragile short-term memory into robust long-term memory. So when exam season finally arrives, you are merely refreshing the material, not trying to relearn it from scratch.
Which naturally leads us to the biggest hurdle of all, procrastination. It's incredibly easy for us to sit here and say, avoid procrastination, but how do you actually take control of that metaphorical car?
It's tough when you're juggling so much.
Right. If you're overwhelmed by 5 different syllabis, how do you manage it all without burning out? This is where I want to introduce the concept of cognitive offloading. You cannot rely on your biological brain to remember every deadline, every reading assignment, and every lab report. You have to build an external brain.
That concept of an academic dashboard is life-saving. The lesson recommends several highly effective digital tools to facilitate this cognitive offloading. The first is utilizing a digital calendar, like Google Calendar.
And not just for your class schedule.
Right, not just for classes, for strict time blocking. You look at your week and actually schedule the 3 hours you will spend reading for sociology and the 2 hours you will spend outlining your history paper. You treat those study blocks with the exact same gravity as a shift at a paying job.
Because if it's not on the calendar, it simply doesn't exist.
Exactly.
Another tool the curriculum highlights is Notion, or, you know, really any similar organizational workspace. The goal here is centralization. You create a single digital hub for your syllabi, your reading notes, and your research PDFs.
It saves so much time.
Yeah, you completely eliminate the friction of hunting through messy desktop folders when you should actually be studying.
And for deadlines, a dedicated task manager like Todoist is invaluable. The moment you are handed the syllabus on day one, you input every single quiz, paper, and exam into the app. You set automated reminders, and then you just let the software carry that mental weight.
Let the app do the stressing for you.
Right. Your brain is meant for processing complex ideas, not for storing a list of dates.
Such a vital distinction. Now, if you really want to fortify this new operating system, the lesson spotlights some exceptional further reading that dives deep into the psychology of academic success. For instance, Carol S. Dweck's work on mindset.
Dweck's research is foundational. She outlines the difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset.
How does that apply to university specifically?
Well, in a university context, let's say you get a poor grade on your first major paper. A fixed mindset interprets that as, I'm not smart enough for college, I'm just a bad writer. It views intelligence as static.
Unchangeable.
Right. A growth mindset, however, looks at that exact same grade and says, my current strategy for writing university-level papers isn't working yet. I need to visit the writing center and adjust my approach. It views academic capability as a muscle that grows through targeted effort.
That reframing is so powerful. It takes the personal judgment out of it.
Exactly.
Another highly recommended resource from the lesson is Cal Newport's How to Become a Straight-A Student. What I find fascinating about Newport's approach is his war on what he calls pseudo-work.
Oh, pseudo-work is the enemy of the modern student.
It really is. Pseudo-work is sitting in the library for 6 hours with your textbook open, but you're, you know, checking social media every 10 minutes and chatting with friends. It feels exhausting. Mm-hmm. So you think you're working hard, but your actual output is incredibly low.
Newport advocates for deep, highly concentrated bursts of study. 2 hours of intense, isolated, deeply focused work is exponentially more productive than 6 hours of distracted pseudo-work.
And it leaves you with more free time.
Yes. It's about maximizing efficiency so you actually have time to enjoy your university life outside of academics. And rounding out the recommendations is Dave Ellis's Becoming a Master Student, which serves as a sort of comprehensive manual for combining these practical skills, time management, active reading, and test-taking strategies into one cohesive approach.
When you look at all of this together, you know, the time locking, the cognitive offloading, the growth mindset, it points to a much larger reality. The stakes here are so much higher than just keeping your GPA up. I want to leave you with a final thought on why this all matters.
It's the big picture.
Exactly. The ultimate secret of university is not the specific facts you memorize, and it's not even the piece of paper you get in graduation. The real secret is that university is the laboratory where you learn how to learn.
That is the exact perfect framing. You are building a framework for navigating ambiguity and mastering complex information completely independently. The software upgrade we've been talking about today is the exact same framework you will use in your first professional job.
Oh, 100%.
When a manager hands you a vague project without a clear roadmap and expects you to just figure it out, mastering these habits now builds a permanent foundation of self-reliance and lifelong adaptability.
As we wrap up this deep dive, we want to remind you that building these routines is a gradual, ongoing process.
Absolutely. No one transitions perfectly overnight. It is a journey of continuous improvement. The goal is consistency, not perfection. Every single time you block out a study session on your calendar, every time you choose to review your notes, and every time you raise your hand in a daunting lecture hall, you are actively building your confidence. Be patient with yourself as you learn to navigate, but remain proactive.
To make sure these concepts really stick, please take the time to review the end of module study guide and actively complete the workbook activities. Putting pen to paper or fingers to keyboard is how you bridge the gap between just understanding these skills and actually applying them to your daily life. We also highly encourage you to explore the reference materials and digital tools like Notion and Todoist that we highlighted in the lesson. They truly can revolutionize your workflow.
They really can.
Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive.
Thank you. Keep pushing your boundaries and embracing the learning process.
We'll leave you with this final thought to mull over. The habits of independence and proactive management you forge right now won't just dictate your success over the next few years. They are the exact tools that will determine your ability to adapt, evolve, and thrive in whatever career you choose to pursue next. See you next time.